Once a lie has been told, there can be two possible consequences. It may be discovered or remain undiscovered. But as we have learned throughout history, the consequences of when a lie is revealed can be quite damaging. Take, for instance, some recent examples, like the reports of Richard Blumenthal's imaginary war record, Adam Wheeler's faked Harvard application, and the valedictorian of Columbia's plagiarized commencement speech. So it seems like a good time to ask a pretty fundamental question. Why do we lie? Today's Please Explain is all about that, why we deceive, and how to tell when others may be trying to pull one over on us. And joining us now to separate fact from fiction are David Livingstone Smith, professor of psychology at the University of New England and author of the book Why We Lie, and Jeff Nance, a former undercover police officer and author of the book Conquering Deception. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
David... Should we assume that humans have always lied, even before they developed language?
Yeah, depending on what we mean by lying. We can use lying in a broad sense to mean deception generally, and in the narrow sense to mean telling untruths, explicit verbal untruths. So if we're using it in the broad sense, yes, absolutely. We ought to assume that our ancestors have always lied.
And you suggest in your book that females might have started lying earlier than males. Why is that?
Did I suggest that? I suggested it because language perhaps began with females. But in the context in which we're now speaking, of course, when we're looking at lies in a very broad sense, language is not terribly relevant. Mm. So explicit verbal lying may have begun with females as hypothetically the first talkers.
What are some of the earliest instances of documented lies in human history?
Oh, well, there are all sorts of, if you look at the most ancient historical documents, of course, you get all kinds of hype about the exploits of the pharaohs and the potentates in ancient Sumeria, Mesopotamia, and so on. I would say those are the first lies. The proclamation that one is a god king and so on and so forth.
Are there certain parts of the brain that are involved in lying?
I'm sure there are. I don't have sufficient expertise in neuropsychology to tell you exactly which, but here's a cautionary note. There are many sorts of lies. So lying isn't a simple entity. And so we would expect, first of all, for anything that occurs in the human mind, parts of the brain are active. And I would anticipate these would be quite diverse depending upon the sorts of lies being told.
Well, much of the way that we can detect a lie is through the way people react physically. Jeff, would that be possible? If I were lying to you right now, would you know because I'm talking to you over the phone?
Well, hello, Leonard. It's interesting that you brought that up because within the study of lie or deception detection, there's two main points of study, the physical and the verbal.
Mm-hmm.
And, the physical, obviously, being body language is the common term. A lot of what I do is more based on verbal communication. So in those contexts where you only hear a person and can't see them, it's more valuable. So, yes, depending on what you're saying, and what the context of the subject and the conversation is, I'd almost do better at telling if you were honest over the phone rather than in person.
Because there are a lot of ways that people can spot liars simply. For example, they may touch their noses or they blink a lot. They raise their eyebrows a lot.
Right. And nose rubs are one of my favorites. And I may sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here. I focus on the verbal, but nose rubs are a piece of body language, and they're really one of the most reliable.
And why do people touch their noses when they're lying?
Well, it's often erroneously assigned as a symptom of lying, and it's not really that simple. Generally, it is a sign of stress or discomfort. In other words, when you walk into, have you ever been into a restaurant where you walk in and physics of the building are such that when you walk into the restaurant, everybody turns to look at you.
Mm-hmm.
You almost feel like you're walking onto the Tonight Show stage. you might see a person walk into a place like that and rub their nose when everybody turns to look at them. It's not because they're lying, they haven't even said anything, but it's uncomfortable. And so when we experience stress or discomfort, the nerves inside the nose tingle, and we reach up to rub it. Now, lying and deception obviously creates stress and discomfort. So when lies are told, very often the nose tingles, and the person telling the lie will rub the nose.
David, how early do humans become capable of lying? Is this something that we do even before we learn to talk?
Yes, again, depending upon what we mean by lying. Very, very plausibly, we deceive before we learn to talk, yes. However, we don't know that we're doing this. And this is actually really, really important. A lot of the time that we are being dishonest to others, we're creating misleading impressions of ourselves to others, we don't know that we're doing it. We're lying to ourselves, as it were, about our lying. So children can only lie in the narrow sense of the word once they understand that other people have a different point of view than they have themselves. And that happens around the age of 4, so it requires a certain amount of cognitive sophistication to be able to tell a deliberate lie.
A lot of people have written about lying. St. Augustine wrote 2 books about it. Nietzsche also, he argued that only the strong can lie. Weak people don't attain the mental fortitude required to tell a good lie. Do you think that's true?
No, I think that's false.
Because Nietzsche was always often so right.
Well, maybe. I think he had good instincts. By the way, when you introduced me as a psychologist. In fact, I'm professor of philosophy.
Uh-huh. So Nietzsche is somebody who you must have thought a bit about.
Oh, yeah, a little bit. I'm by no means an expert on him. And he had good instincts. But look, lying comes naturally to human beings. It's like breathing or sweating. Most of the time we're not aware that we do it. We all do it very frequently. And we all lie to ourselves very frequently as well. So Nietzsche seems to have thought it requires some special effort. Deliberate lying is much harder than the spontaneous, unreflective lies that we tell in everyday life.
But we have lots of different kinds of lies that range from, as you say, the unconscious ones to the very conscious ones.
Yeah.
And there are people who lie a lot, and then there are pathological liars and compulsive liars.
Yeah.
So how many classifications and I throw this out to both of you, has anyone classified all the different kinds of liars?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Jeff, what about deliberate lying in your case? Can you tell when somebody is just lying in an unconscious way and when they're really fabricating something?
Well, a lot of my experience originally was in the context of police interrogations. As a police officer, that's where my learning began with all of this. And so the people that I dealt with naturally had something to hide, which is a motivation for a lot of people who are dishonest. Mm-hmm. We typically use it as a defense mechanism to either avoid a consequence or to appear in a more favorable way to somebody else. So most of the context that I dealt with it in was as a defensive device. Someone was trying to cover up something.
And that's a special kind of lying. For example, the lie that Richard Blumenthal is accused of is not so much a cover-up, it's just something to self-aggrandize a bit. On the other hand, Richard Nixon may very well have been lying as a cover-up, and then some lies are so blatant you wonder what the liar was up to, like when Governor Sanford of South Carolina said that he was hiking in Appalachia when he was really in Argentina.
Right, and the interesting thing about public figures is that they're on tape. There's either video or audio tape. You know, the average person who gets caught in something can always say to the person after the fact, well, you misunderstood me.
Mm-hmm.
I
misspoke.
But when there's tape, it's hard to dodge what you said. So then they come up with things like Mr. Blumenthal did. Well, I misspoke.
Mm-hmm.
They do have to take some credit for their words because the record is there. It's irrefutable.
My guest on Please Explain It, Jeff Nance, who's written a book called Conquering Deception. and David Livingstone Smith, whose book is Why We Lie. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. In a little while, we'll be taking your calls, by the way, at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Do other animals lie other than humans, David?
Deception is found throughout nature. Even very, very simple organisms deceive. And so that tells us something about why we deceive. Natural selection, evolution, has inclined living things to try and create false impressions in order to enhance their prospects for reproductive success. We're all part of that. So, in fact, even it's arguable that even bodily organs deceive. So we're not alone.
Wait, bodily organs deceive? In other words, our stomachs may lie to us and say, well, I'm hungry when we're not?
No, the example would be what happens when a woman gets pregnant. Mm-hmm. Of course, she has to develop a placenta. Placentas are built out of paternal genes, not maternal genes. And so the placenta has to avoid getting attacked by the woman's immune system. And it does this by producing a chemical coating that makes it invisible to the immune system. And this is precisely the same method that parasitic worms use to deceive the immune systems of their hosts. They put on a cloak of invisibility, as it were, a chemical cloak of invisibility.
There are also false pregnancies. Is that the body lying to
No,
itself?
I'm not sure what that is. I wouldn't hazard a guess.
There's a lot about lying, well, in religious writing. St. Augustine mm-hmm. wrote two books about lying, and then there's stuff in the Bible, including the commandment against bearing false witness.
Yes, which very wisely is a very restricted kind of lying. There is no commandment that says thou shalt not lie. And it's a good thing there isn't, because that would be an impossible commandment to fulfill.
Jeff, we talked about spotting lies, and we talked about the body language that helps you spot lie. But you said you can tell a lot from just a tone of a voice?
And not so much the tone of the voice, but just the sheer volume of information that's transmitted through words. Figures vary, but we can think roughly 250 words per minute. We can speak about 125. That's a huge amount of information coming past our ears every minute. I use the analogy, you'd have to dance like Michael Jackson to out-communicate those words with your body.
But
you can always learn more from a person's words than their body.
You've worked as an undercover cop, so you were living a complete lie for hours on end.
I was. I was a paid professional liar, and you don't hear many people admit to that. But, a cop can't tell people who he is or she is, and so you have a false identity, a driver's license issued under that false name and date of birth, so on. You have to have cover stories to explain who you are, where you've been, where you work, where you live, and it's all a lie.
I'm assuming that you try to keep it as simple as possible. It's been my experience. The more complicated the lie, the easier it is to tell that somebody's lying.
Exactly. Yeah, and the more complex a lie gets, the easier it is to break it down, and similarly, the harder it is to keep it up. And we typically worked with informants who would introduce us to drug dealers. So not only did I have to lie, but the guy next to me, who was typically in trouble for something, that's why he's working with the police, he had to lie too, and we had to coordinate that. So it wasn't all up to me. I was relying on someone else's ability to lie and do it well.
What about the other side of police work? I've heard lie detectors really don't always work.
Yeah, and I probably shouldn't say this. Lie detector operators who I know get upset with me when I make these statements. But the principal use of a lie detector is to scare the truth out of you. It's an interrogation or an interview device. So, I have seen people admit the most outrageous things under threat of a lie detector. Mm-hmm. You know, typically, and I'm talking about in the context of pre-employment interviews, they will own up to things that no one would ever know otherwise, just because they know that they're about to be hooked up to the lie detector and they don't want to look like they're lying. So they divulge this stuff. And that's the real purpose of a lie detector, to coerce a person into just telling the truth.
There's no way to really get somebody to tell the truth, I imagine. Not even those truth serums that they used to inject in the old movies.
Right. Well, there's lots of, you know, mythical, maybe not so mythical tricks. Bamboo shoots under the fingernails and rubber hoses and bright lights, you know. But someone doesn't want to divulge the truth, they won't.
Have you told Dick Cheney that?
People rarely admit lying. You know, you can really catch a person in a lie, and they very seldom come clean.
David, last week Maureen Dowd called one of her op-ed columns political lies as wishes, and she argued that all politicians can fall prey to the allure of their own image, so much so that they invent lies because they truly believe that this is in line with their own created persona.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that happens regularly? Is that the reason that we have Blumenthal saying that, or Joe Biden stealing parts of the British politician Neil Kinnock's autobiography?
Oh, well, look, I really do think that politicians are professional liars, and that's essential to success in politics. Politicians are masters at creating false images of themselves in all sorts of ways, because remember, lying isn't just, as they say now, misspeaking. It's what you don't say. It's the way that you say it. It's the way that you hold yourself. It's what you imply about yourself indirectly. Success in politics requires one, I think, essentially to deceive the public in a way that is in accord with their own self-deceptions. That's the key to success. And so those who move through the system and who manage to get in senior positions must be very skilled liars. And this is the case in many walks of life, by the way, not just politics.
Although you say in your book, Why We Lie, that although we're taught to value truth over lies, there's something unhuman about never telling a lie. And anyone who's read Dostoevsky's The Idiot and remembers Prince Mishkin, a man who sometimes too honest on one level, or there's the other side, the person who says, can I be frank? And you know they're going to tell some kind of a truth, but it's going to be really mean. You're not sure you really want to hear that truth.
Rampant honesty would be destructive. It would be fatal to human society.
We'll get into that later, I'm sure, when we take some calls. Jeff, just one more thing. When you're lying, when you are undercover, do you try to tell as much truth as you can? In other words, if a drug dealer asks you how many kids you have, do you give him the right number rather than bothering to make up a lie?
It would depend on the question, Leonard.
Uh-huh.
There would be some things that a question like that, I would probably just redirect the conversation. And that's a technique that a lot of people use, actually. If they don't want to answer you, they will stall or ask a question back. They'll throw it back, throw the potato back in your lap.
But isn't that something that we spot? I mean, when I'm interviewing a politician and I ask a question and the politician throws something back at me, I know, well, I'm going to have to do a follow-up on that because I'm, in effect, being evaded, if not out and out lied to.
Exactly, exactly. But you're an exception to the rule because most people won't catch that and they won't come back with the question again. You know, I have a general rule of three strikes and you're out. If a person avoids your question, avoids answering your question directly on the third pass, then they're probably hiding something.
Yeah, well, in my case, I just move on to the next question, assuming that the audience has heard that the guest is hiding something. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll take listener calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Please don't send me any email because I can't access that during these segments when I'm on the air. But we'd love to hear from you. Again, 212-433-9692. My guests are Jeff Nance a former undercover police officer, author of the book Conquering Deception, and David Livingstone Smith, professor of philosophy at the University of New England, his book Why We Lie. And we're back with our guest, Jeff Nance, author of Conquering Deception, and David Livingstone Smith, whose book is Why We Lie. We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. And let's get right to some of those calls, beginning with James from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. I wanted to make a comment about your question earlier about the brain areas involved in lying. As your guest so astutely assumed, the brain areas are extremely, extremely diverse. A lot of the research that's gone into this has been focused on the possibility of using fMRI brain scans to reveal when individuals are lying, and most of the research has basically resulted in the fact that you can't do it because of this variability. In fact, many of the researchers have found that they can't even reproduce their own results once they've found them initially. So I just wanted to make that comment for your listeners.
Do you have anything to add, either of my guests?
Well, we tend to, I think, wrongly assume that a certain type of mental state must be located in a particular type of state of the central nervous system. But that's actually an unwarranted assumption. There are broad generalizations, but there's nothing like a one-to-one mapping of mental states onto neurological states.
Let's go to another call. Mark from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? I have a question about children and lying. My son, he's 11. I'm getting concerned about him. Sometimes he does blatant out-and-out lies to his friends about things that he's never done, grander about his weekend, to just making up information about things that he wants us to think he knows about. It could be just about anything. And so subtle, and when he says it, it's quick, and I usually call him out on it and ask him why, he told that lie that he thinks he knows about something that it's obviously he doesn't know about it. Can you make a comment about that?
And I want to, before you do, we have somebody wrote in something similar, only about an older person. A listener in Yorkville writes, I describe my brother as a pathological liar. He spins elaborate lies about needing money or will say outright that he knows something about a well-known figure. It's really hard to pin him down. I've confronted him directly about lies about money. He always has another story. My spouse says he's not a pathological liar. Well, then what kind of liar is he? In both cases, it sounds to me like we have something similar going on here. You want to begin, David?
Sure. The term pathological liar is a little bit confusing. I think what we call pathological liars are people who lie incompetently, poorly, unnecessarily. In the case that you just read from the email, this is obviously someone who is lying to get something, which is generally why we all lie, because we want to get something which is more difficult to get through honest and straightforward means. And the same with the child. I mean, I'm not sure why your caller is worried about him.
Well, I don't remember even myself being the age of 11 or 12 making up, stories or making myself seem to know about something that I knew I didn't know about.
Well, so maybe you didn't do it, or maybe you don't remember doing it. I think there's reason to be concerned if this child can't distinguish truth from untruth.
No,
or
I don't think
this
case. I think he knows doing it.
Sorry, I didn't hear.
I believe that he knows that telling an untruth.
Okay, so, I mean, who am I to say? I don't know the child, but he's trying something on. Who knows? He may have a glorious career in politics ahead of him.
Well, he just may be testing limits sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take another call along these lines. Dan from Brooklyn. Boy, all these calls are from men from Brooklyn. What's going on here? I live in Brooklyn. Is everybody lying to me all day?
thanks for taking my call. I was saying that many years ago when I was a young guy, I was in a bar with a friend, and this guy came up to him and started talking about this time when they had been in this confrontation and was back-to-back and blah, blah, blah. Very elaborate, you know. And then he walked away, and my friend turned to me and said, "Never happened." And I said, "What?" He says, "It never happened." He says, "This guy always tells this story, and I don't want to embarrass him, but it never happened." But he really seemed to believe it. I was just wondering, is it possible to lie and really believe something, you know, that never happened?
Come to believe your own lie?
I think if a person tells a lie enough, they may come to believe it. And incidentally, that's really a trick or the key to becoming a believable liar, if anybody's interested in that, is believing the lie. And a person like that who is evidently repeated the same lie over and over has confidence that people are going to believe it because he probably hasn't been called on it. As in the case of your friend, he didn't confront the liar. He told you after he left.
So when you invented some lies as an undercover cop at a certain point, did you come to believe them?
No. Uh-huh. I never did. It was no more than an actor believes that he is a particular role. It's really role-playing. It's acting. Out of the situation, I'm out of the lie, and no, it's for a purpose, and it's momentary, and that's it.
A listener wants to know and asks this to both of you, have you seen the TV show Lie to Me, and if so, what do you think of it?
I haven't seen it, but I know the man that it's based on. It's based on Paul Ekman, the liar.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen it, Leonard, and one thing that I read about it, incidentally, a few months ago, was that they were going to include in one episode, I think it was in the script, a character was going to use the nose gesture that we were talking about earlier. And the article, at least, said that Paul Ekman had objected to that because he didn't believe there was any substantiation for that being a sign of lying, which, incidentally, I found to be one of the most reliable signs of, again, not just lying, but stress. And so, you know, it incorporates a lot of the body language studies that he's done into the show. It's an interesting show, and it's certainly something that's not been done before.
I only hope that if somebody is wondering whether I'm lying or not, I don't just get an itch at the end of my nose that has nothing to do with the lie.
Well, yeah, and some people will just have an itch. So the important thing is to is to notice what's been said, what the topic of conversation is, who just walked into the room, what was the question that you just asked them. You have to know what precipitated the nose rub. And you may discover that they just had an itch.
Chris from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Oh, it's just fine.
Very well, thanks.
They're both lying, by the way. They're not feeling well.
That could be.
First-time caller, but interesting topic. And my question relates to poker and poker tells. I've been reading recently that, you know, physical signs while playing cards, and poker is an art of deception or a game of deception and misinformation or accumulation of small amounts of information. And, you know, I've heard things that, you know, reading the eyes are difficult because you're too far away, but things like watching the breathing, you know, body gesture, sitting too close to the table might be a sign of strength versus sitting back relaxed might be a sign of bluffing. And my question is are you or have you done any studies or research that says, hey, you know, when you see people that tend to do this, that this might be a percentage of maybe untruth, bluffing, or something to that effect. And I'll just finish up with one statement. Somebody said something to me the other day. I was in Atlantic City, and he asked me a question. And when I spoke, he said my voice cracked a little bit. Now, I think that happens normally for me, but he said it caused him a concern that he folded. And I wanted to hear those physical signs that you've heard of that maybe you could share.
And by the way, Chris, since you know that works, I would have my voice crack every time I was bluffing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, and that's a great point because that's a game both ways. If you're trying to read tells in another player, they're also trying to send tells probably. or you run that risk anyway. There's a manipulation of what you're seeing, because so you've got two variables going there. You've got what you're interpreting, and you've got what they're possibly intentionally sending. And probably the best advice I could give you on that is if you can watch a player when you're not involved in the game and learn how they behave in a given circumstance when you're not involved. Remove yourself and establish a baseline, how they are in different phases of play, and then use that when you're in the game with them.
A listener asks, is lying part of the thrill of cheating, or when it's badly done, is lying an effort to get caught?
Well, yeah, I mean, people can do anything for any reason. The people, one of the indications of a lie is a fleeting smile, which doesn't always occur, but sometimes occurs, which represents, obviously, the pleasure in getting away with it. Successfully deceiving is sometimes, very often, a thrilling experience. So yes, of course. Can I just add, though, in response to the previous caller, professional poker players study one another for years, and it is an intensely psychological game. This is one of the very best places to go for research, both into deception and deception detection.
Because people do have certain patterns, but if you're aware that you have a pattern, you might very well vary the pattern to confuse the other person.
That's right, and this is what high-level poker players do. They will in fact, create artificial patterns just to deceive.
Derek,
or suddenly vary their usual pattern. You have to have a great amount of vigilance and self-knowledge to do this. And it's really, really hard to sustain for very long.
We go now to Derek from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Good. The question is for, I believe he's done the name of Mr. Grant, the former undercover police officer. What do you think about the subculture act or practice of testifying while lying under oath for police officers? I think they call it test the lying. And how can it be assuaged?
Leonard, I didn't clearly hear his question.
Basically, he was asking about when cops lie under oath, called testa-lying, which it does happen. I know it's shocking to you as a police officer, but it does happen.
Right. And he wants my thoughts on that?
Yeah.
Well, it's obviously, I wouldn't condone that at all. It's, I guess he's asking in the context of police officers that have not put a case together properly and are trying to cover that up in
mm-hmm.
court.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I would hope that it's a rare circumstance. Even being rare, when it happens, just by its nature, it's going to be widely publicized. So there's a lot of things like that that get a lot of airtime because they're egregious or outrageous, but they're not necessarily common. I think most cops are honest, and I've always said that, you know, you don't have to lie to make a great case as a cop, because it's pretty easy a lot of times to catch people. And there's enough good cases out there that you can tell what happened honestly and have plenty of them.
We have very little time. I want to sneak one more call in. You have to make it very fast. Oh, well, he made it very fast by not responding. That we pretty much have run out of time. And I'm not lying when I say that I found this really fascinating. The two books that my guests have written, David Livingston Smith's book is called Why We Lie, and Jeff Nance's book is called Conquering Deception, both very different kinds of takes on lying, but just look into your own heart and you know that you've lied sometimes because you were trying to get by, sometimes because you didn't want to hurt somebody. In some cases, like Kwame Kilpatrick, he just had a judge yell at him. Most compelling is that you lied in this court and continue to lie after you pleaded guilty to lying. So some people just lie. Thank you so much for being with us, Jeff and David.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you.
My pleasure.